The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Disease of the thyroid is presented by Dr. John Sutton.
So the iodide metabolism is important in the synthesis of thyroid hormone. This shows the steps. One of the most important ones is organification, because that is catalyzed by the most common thyroid issue, which is thyroid peroxidase. Can be, if you have antibodies against thyroid peroxidase, then you can be subsequently caused by Hashimoto and limit the production of thyroid hormone. Antibodies to thyroid peroxidase antibodies, historically known as antimicrosomal antibodies, rarely you'll see it reported as that. And thyroglobulin antibodies are antibodies to thyroglobulin, which I consider to be the backbone of thyroid hormone. So T4 is the primary hormone produced in the thyroid. 20% of T3 is produced in the thyroid. There are other labs that you might get if you order thyroid panels. Sometimes in hospitals that are rural, or I call them in Nevada, Timbuktu hospitals, sometimes you will get labs that you don't intend to get. And you might get things like reverse T3 if you have clinicians in your area that are doing regenerative medicine or other sort of pseudoscience thyroidology. You might see those lab tests, but routinely you shouldn't see things like reverse T3. And you might see reverse T3 elevated in as an alternative pathway for thyroid hormone production in sick euthyroid, but there's no reason to order that test. So a very small percentage is free. So we often order, if we're going to order T4, we order a free T4. Rarely order a free T3 because it's a harder test to do, and especially in Timbuktu, you might not get a good result. And then a free thyroid hormone is the active form of thyroid hormone. In most cases, if the patient is taking a T4, they naturally convert to T3, and you don't need to assess a T3 in those instances. So 25 years ago, when I first took my boards, the first time I saw this TT4, TT3, wasn't something that I was as familiar with. I was taking it as an endocrine fellow when I took my internal medicine boards. But the key here is that thyroid function testing is bound to various factors, such as thyroid binding globulin. So if thyroid binding globulin goes up, then T4 total goes up, or T3 total goes up if thyroid binding globulin goes up. And T3 resin uptake is inversely related to thyroid binding globulin. So if thyroid binding globulin goes up, T3 resin uptake goes down. TBG is not a routine test. You shouldn't try to order it. It's thyroid binding globulin. TSH is a routine test. And if you're going to pick one test to order, you want to pick the TSH for thyroid function. And TRH is thyroid-releasing hormone. Also, don't order that test. You don't need that. So in regards to thyroid panel testing, I suggest that you not check thyroid panel. And if you check thyroid panel, you need to know what it is you're ordering. So, and if you're in training and you go to a different institution, their thyroid panel isn't going to be the same panel. So you want to know, if you're going to order a panel, what's in it. And this is the reason. So I practice in Carson City, Nevada, and a patient came to me who was postpartum. She had previous Graves, hyper-HYPER thyroidism, and she was on thyroid hormone postpartum, had a lot of problems in her pregnancy. She also, prior to that, had a thyroidectomy. So when she came to me, the doctor, I think, did not intend to order all these tests, but what he got was a TSH, total T4, T3 resin uptake, and free thyroxine index. Now, I say don't order free thyroxine index, but this is case in point, ordered just a few years ago, where I had to interpret it because it came to me as a specialist. I had to interpret a level that I never would have ordered prior to, after maybe 20 years ago or 25 years ago. But this particular facility, lab facility, did give him a thyroid panel, and this was in the thyroid panel. Now, most of your places, if you order thyroid panel, you'll get a free T4 and a TSH, and those are perfectly fine in most institutions. In this case, the lady, you go back to the standard test. So if you have a problem with thyroid function testing, then, and I think, you should be able to understand and interpret TFTs because you're going to see them on a regular basis. And in this scenario, the patient was on birth control pills. The TSH, the most important test, the TSH was 3.860, and the answer to the question was to increase her thyroid hormone, Synthroid. In her case, her T4 was elevated, and T3 resin uptake was low because she was on birth control pills. So a gentleman comes in, fatigue, weakness, depression, constipation, weight gain, common signs of this unnamed disorder, slow reflex relaxation known as pseudomyotonia, and periorbital edema, coarse dry skin. So this is a gentleman from suburban Detroit in my practice when I was there many years ago. He had this. He had actually was supposed to have been on thyroid hormone and had not been taking it for a while. So he has periorbital edema. And this this lady, oh, let's see here. This lady has pseudomyotonia from a thyroidectomy where her reflex, the uptick of her reflex is good and the downswing is slow. Actually, when you do reflexes on patients that are markedly hypothyroid, they will, all the phases of the reflex are slow, but you can see it most dramatically in the downswing of the reflex. This is primary hypohypothyroidism. These patients typically have elevated TSH and low free T4, although you can expect that many of the patients might have a normal free T4 and an elevated TSH, and I would treat to the same target in non-cancer patients at a TSH of 1.0. Prior to 30 years ago, there were lesser and lesser accuracy of these types of tests. And so in the old days of endocrinology, prior to when I was in training, they might have also done a cholesterol level. High cholesterol is associated with hypohypothyroidism. High CPK is also, so a patient comes in with muscle pain and you get a CPK or they go to the ER, they're gonna have, if they have muscle pain, if their TSH is elevated, their CPK may also be elevated. And of course, very commonly, at least in first world countries, positive antibodies, particularly anti-thyroid peroxidase antibodies. So in a similar scenario, but with a different history, patient presents with head trauma and hypohypotension, loss of consciousness in a motor vehicle accident, fatigue and weakness, pseudomyotonia like the young lady with thyroid cancer and thyroidectomy. And when you see this patient, you might also do thyroid function, but in this case, the patient presents as hypothyroid, but the TSH is low, not high. And the TSH alone, even if it's normal, will not necessarily tell you the answer. T3 and free T4 would be low. And if the free T4 is low, in most cases, that is your lab, not a head trauma with secondary hypohypothyroidism. I have barely 2 to 5 cases of secondary hypothyroidism. And so every time you see a normal TSH with a low free T4, generally it is not that. You have to put the history together with it. Secondary hypohypothyroidism. So either a low TSH, low free T4, or a low free T4 and a normal TSH. And in most lab facilities, In fact, I have one in my area who, when I get a low free T4 at a normal TSH, I have to think long and hard not to call that person secondary hypothyroidism. So the treatment is the same for both secondary and primary. It's just the goal for thyroid function is different. There are multiple brand names of thyroid hormone. It is generally, endocrinologists would say you need to fight for brand name thyroid hormone because of the unreliability of generic. If you don't believe that the generic is unreliable, you should know that the generic sometimes changes month to month at a pharmacy. So the pharmacy plans actually sell it based on price, and so it is cheaper than brand named. But if the generic changes every month, then even the generic isn't the same every month, and you're going to get variable thyroid function. Oral is absorption is about 80%. So if you know a patient to be euthyroid that goes into the hospital on a ventilator or in some way cannot take oral thyroid hormone, then you want to give them 80% of their scheduled dose. We do treat them with the same medicines, but secondary hypo, HYPOthyroidism, you can't use the TSH. I often do run a TSH, but I also run a free T4 on a day that they haven't taken their thyroid hormone so that the free T4 won't be boosted by taking thyroid hormone in the same few hours before. Treatment titration, it takes about 6 weeks, sometimes longer for the TSH to pituitary to recover and the TSH to get back. You want to rapidly titrate in a patient, for example, that is pregnant because you only have so much time to get it to the right spot, and you want to avoid rapid titration in the elderly or patients with coronary artery disease. And generally, I say no thyroid hormone the day of lab, and you mostly need thyroxine. There's very little supportive literature of giving any other type of thyroid hormone. A handful of patients do have trouble converting T4 to T3, and in that case, you add back T3, but not on the basis of a T3 level, but on the basis of where the TSH is. And then, of course, if they're secondary hypo, HYPOthyroidism, then you have trouble sort of making that right. Myxedema coma refers to very severe hypo-HYPOthyroidism in which you can get alternative factors other than just the simple. You might have hypoventilation, hypothermia, hyponatremia, hyponatension, hypotension, and seizures and hypoglycemia. You should consider that some of these patients might have associated adrenal insufficiency that you don't already know about. So you want to test them for adrenal insufficiency and treat them, or just go ahead and treat them with steroids so that as you're titrating the dose of thyroid hormone that you don't cause an adrenal crisis from excessive thyroid hormone or even normal amounts of thyroid hormone. So you evaluate for adrenal insufficiency, you treat with IV thyroxine, you treat with fluid supportive care, hydrocortisone, respiratory support, but you do have to be careful in critically ill patients about how rapidly you titrate the thyroid hormone. Etiologies of primary hypo-HYPOthyroidism are many, most common of which in first world countries is Hashimoto. Iodine deficiency is uncommon in the United States and other first world countries, but more common in third world countries such as rural Ethiopia. The other thing that can cause primary hypo-HYPOthyroidism would be antithyroid drugs, methimazole and PTU, and preferentially we do not use PTU routinely in hyper-HYPER thyroidism anymore. Some people might come to you from another office on methimazole, may not be able to name it, so you might have to try to sort that out to see if they're hypothyroid because somebody else is treating them with antithyroid medicines. In the United States, the most common medical way to treat hyper-HYPER thyroidism would be radioactive iodine, but that is becoming less and less common. If a patient is taking iodine, this causes an effect where the patient may develop hypoidtohypothyroidism. That's known as the Wolff-Chaikoff effect. Secondary etiologies would be hypothalamic radiation trauma, infiltrative or neoplastic disease, as well as the pituitary, and you can also get resistance to thyroid hormone. So primary versus secondary, what's the end organ hormone, and is the TSH responding? Is the response appropriate to the change of thyroid hormone? Low free T4, normal TSH would be an inappropriate response and would suggest that this might have a pituitary etiology. Low free T4 and high TSH is the appropriate response, and the problem is in the thyroid. 33-year-old male comes with nervousness, insomnia, diaphoresis, tachycardia. This gentleman had a goiter. If you put a stethoscope over the goiter in this disorder, you can get a Bruy. So this is a patient from suburban Detroit who had the classic stare. He has some eyelid retraction. May or may not have had proptosis. So you can have eyelid retraction without proptosis, or you can have both. He had this huge thyroid as well, and his diagnosis was hyperhidroperthyroidism. This gentleman was hypothyroid when he got to me, but at some point he had a diagnosis of hyperhidroperthyroidism and had persistent eyelid retraction. This is a patient that might routinely go to an eye surgeon for because of exposure to corneal exposure and dry eye syndrome. This lady from Nevada had eyelid retraction. You can see an active when she is refocusing. You can see, so when she is refocusing, her especially her upper eyelid retracts, revealing the sclera above the iris. That is eyelid retraction. This lady as well, she has eyelid retraction as she refocuses. You can see the sclera up here. She had, both of these ladies had hyperhidroperthyroidism. You can have thyroid eye disease without hyperthyroidism. I do have a couple of patients that I follow for thyroid eye disease that have never had hyperhidroperthyroidism, and a couple that have had only hypohidroperthyroidism. This is a suburban Detroit lady of mine who had, when I left Detroit back 16 years ago, she had been treated twice with radioactive iodine for hyperhidroperthyroidism. Goiter is common, so if you have hyperthyroidism, generally you'll have an existent goiter as well. This is a patient from Nevada who had a huge thyroid. In this case, because this was a young kid, young and fairly muscular, you might think that you're seeing just muscle, and so you might want to have them sip water and swallow just so you can see, just without palpating the thyroid, how big the thyroid is. These patients will have high free T4, low TSH, sometimes also high T3. In the case of labs that you didn't order, if you happen to order a thyroglobulin, it will be high. If you happen to order a free thyroxin index, it'll be high. And mostly all antibodies, including Hashimoto antibodies, will be positive in these types of patients, particularly with a diffuse thyroid disease. So the thyroid imaging is the next step after you've identified the patient is hyperhidroperthyroid. You want to do a nuclear thyroid scan. This is because you want to separate out thyroiditis, which is observation, from something like Graves-like disease, where the scan will tell you which one and how to treat. This is a patient that probably was relatively euthyroid. When you look at a thyroid scan, You want to see whether there's background as well as the thyroid, or whether the thyroid stands out with no background activity. This is a patient who presented to my office and with already having had a thyroid scan, and he was on amiodarone. And amiodarone has lots of plain iodine in it, and I call it sticky iodine, and it can be there for many, many weeks. So if you get a low uptake or poorly visualized thyroid on scan, you want to think, is the patient on something that could be making it look this way? This would also be the presentation in a patient who had had a contrast, iodine contrast study. and this is a Graves patient. If you look in the upper left, that's the whole neck, and you don't see salivary glands, and very little background, and that suggests that all the activity is going into the thyroid, which makes the patient hyper-HIPER thyroid. This is a patient with a hot nodule. She did have a left lobe of the thyroid, but there wasn't anything happening there. All the activity was in the right. It was a hot nodule. I'm showing you the thyroid scans because took boards previously, not the endocrine ones, not necessarily just the endocrine ones, there were thyroid scan images on the test, and you're expected to know that, I think. The treatment of hyper-HIPER thyroidism would be antithyroid medications and beta blockers, radioactive iodine, and surgery. We generally do not use propylthiouracil because of its hepatotoxicity. Now, mostly methimazole, and propylthiouracil, though, is the preferred treatment in the first trimester of pregnancy. Antithyroid medicines lower the white cell count, raise the liver blood test. Radioactive iodine is highly effective, but you have to be careful in some populations. It is radiation. You don't want to give it to patients with thyroid eye disease routinely. Generally, it takes more if you want to treat a very large thyroid or nodular thyroid disease. Surgery is sometimes a good choice and preferred by the patients at times, but you want to prep the patients with antithyroid medicines and beta blockers. These are the etiologies of hyper-HIPER thyroidism, including Graves' disease and toxic multinodular goiters being the most common. If the patient has a high radioactive iodine uptake, they are overproducing thyroid hormone. High to normal, they are usually overproducing thyroid hormone, but sometimes can have euthyroid uptakes in nodular thyroid disease. And in regards to thyroiditis, you want to be careful about this one because you don't want to treat patients as Graves-like if they have low uptakes on scan or poorly visualized thyroid on scan. This does happen in Hashimoto thyroiditis, but the most common presentation to your offices, which is the patient presents already hypothyroid and they've already gone through the hyperthyroid state and converted on their own, treated symptomatically. You can have silent thyroiditis or the tender thyroiditis known as de Quervain's thyroiditis. In that case, again, hyper-HIPER thyroid lab. They go have their nuclear thyroid scan. The uptake is low. There's been no iodine contamination. That's consistent with thyroiditis. This is a patient, again, with iodine contamination. In this case, it was amiodarone. This is a patient of mine who presented to his internist, who was not a DO, and he presented to his internist, and the internist said, you have hyperthyroidism, and you have poor uptake on scan, so we're going to put you on antithyroid medicines. In his case, he did have amiodarone a year before this scan, so there's a possibility that that was an issue, but most probably he had subacute thyroiditis. And I took him off the methimazole, and for 3 years now, he's been euthyroid. He was only on antithyroid medicine for a few months. So again, low uptake, high thyroid lab, low uptake with no known iodine contamination. That's thyroiditis. It's treated symptomatically. And the patients generally have a euthyroid and then hypothyroid state, and over several months they go back to euthyroid again, and generally it doesn't happen more than once. So the thyroid scan helps to determine the next step. Is the thyroid overproducing or is the thyroid inflamed? And that's a concept that you really want to get down pat. We don't generally do nuclear imaging for a goiter. Unless we're concerned about a nodule, and we don't usually do nuclear thyroid imaging for thyroid nodules. Mainly, we're trying to sort out the anatomy if the patient is euthyroid. Hypothyroid patients, we don't really think of completely infiltrated glands that somehow have cancer or something like that. So if they're euthyroid and there's no anatomic abnormality, then you want to you don't really need to image them. So which nodule to biopsy? Physical examination is important, but ultrasounds are very good these days. And if there's any doubt that you might have a thyroid nodule, you don't want to do random screening. But if there's a personal history of radiation exposure of the head and neck or a family history of thyroid cancer, then you need to do that type of screening. Otherwise, you don't do it routinely unless you palpate something bad. Nodules that are less than 1 centimeter are generally not biopsied, and nodules that are between 1 and 1.5 is kind of on the fence. The risk is not lower with multiple nodules. When I first started in practice, we would teach that if you have multiple nodules, it's good. If you have a solitary nodule, it's bad, and that stuff is no longer good. Sometimes you might be in a facility where a radiologist is still saying to you, multiple nodules is okay, don't worry about this one, and that's just not true anymore. Every nodule has its own significance. There is the American College of Radiology has come out with a way to evaluate thyroid nodules more specifically, and these are referred to as TRADs. This is not completely an endocrine convention. It's really a radiology thing. They kind of came up with it without a lot of endocrine involvement, but it may be something that you see on your reports, the TRADs. If you do, you can pull up a thing like this that basically says the shape of it, or if there are calcifications or there are issues with a nodule, maybe you want to biopsy it. This is a hot thyroid nodule. Effectively, we never biopsy these. This is a thyroid nodule that occurred in a patient in suburban Detroit that had external radiation for lymphoma 30 years prior to this. Turned out her biopsy was suspicious, but the final path on the surgery was not cancer. This was a patient with multiple thyroid nodules and a goiter, again in suburban Detroit. She had a lot of benign biopsies, but in her case, because the thyroid was so large and she was young in her 50s, we thought it was reasonable to go ahead and have her have surgery, and it was benign at surgery. So we biopsy dominant or palpable lesions, but first and foremost, if you have a thyroid nodule, you want to prove that what the patient's thyroid status is. You'd want it because you're going to take a different path if they're hyper, H-Y-P-E-R. Do not assume that every palpable abnormality is a nodule. So sometimes you'll think you feel something, and you'll do an ultrasound, and there's no nodule, and that's okay. That nodule isn't hidden. It's just some little texture change on palpation. Thyroid nodules are common in Hashimoto. It doesn't make them more or less malignant. And most thyroid cancers, less than 10%, are in the general population, less than 10% are cancer. So the adverse physical findings that we look for would be microcalcifications rather than dense calcification for malignancy, central increased Doppler flow, hypoechoic nodules, HYPEO. Most nodules are hypoechoic, so this doesn't settle a lot. And absent, not having a halo is not good, and an irregular border. The Bethesda classification is the most important that most pathologists should be using these days. They give you 6 different categories, including everything from benign to malignant, and the atypias and the follicular neoplasms are the ones that give us the most trouble as far as deciding surgery or not. This was a patient from suburban Detroit that had inferiorly on the right, on her right, inferiorly, there was a defect in activity. She had a multinodular thyroid. There was a big cyst there. Surgery for suspicious lesions found by FNA. Follicular lesions, you cannot always determine whether or not it's cancer or not without removing it surgically. But there also is molecular testing now to help us decide whether or not to proceed with surgery. Benign lesions, you observe and we no longer suppress them with thyroid hormone. We did that decades ago when most of you were small children. We do not routinely do that now unless the TSH is elevated. This is a patient post-op from a thyroid cancer surgery. She has a Schwastik sign. You can see her cheek, her eye twitch. She also had a Trousseau sign, which is when you have hypohidrotropiocalcemia postoperatively, and you or any hypohidrotropiocalcemia, and when you increase the cuff and lower the blood volume to the upper extremity, then you get carpopedal spasm, which is what she had in this setting. She actually recovered from this and didn't need treatment several weeks after surgery. Trousseau sign. Thyroid cancer, papillary is well differentiated, as well as follicular and Hürthle cell. Those are the ones that we consider treating with radioactive iodine, and the more critical one would be a poorly differentiated or anaplastic thyroid cancer. And so the papillary is the best, and poorly differentiated or anaplastic is the worst. The important thing about thyroid cancer now is we don't treat them all with radioactive iodine. And when I was in my training and early practice, we treated them all no matter what the size was. We don't do that quite so much anymore. Total thyroidectomy for well-differentiated thyroid carcinoma, I-131 ablation if the lesion is big enough or if there are mets. And you want to do a preoperative nodal evaluation to make sure you don't need neck dissection. If we do radioactive iodine, we do whole body scans to see pre and post what happens there. And the goal is suppression of TSH as long as the patient can tolerate it. Periodic ultrasound imaging and biopsy of specific nodes with thyroglobulin in the washout and cytology of the nodes if discovered. This is a patient with radioactive iodine early, and then a year later, the radioactive iodine uptake in the neck was gone. And this is a early star artifact. There was a fair amount of activity in the neck, and then a year later, the radioactivity in the neck is gone.